resolution I would get with over-the-air broadcast digital. K2EJ, K2RIW.
Well, if you want to know the truth, none of them. They all downgrade. They go to lower bit rates because they have bandwidth limitations, including wires.
Wow. So, if I appreciate the resolution that I get out of digital, I think you're saying, I'm guessing there's a couple of pay-per-view premium channels on cable and fiber, which are high-res digital. I guess there's a few of them. But I think you're telling me that it's almost a minority. Is that true, Eric?
No, there's actually none of them, including the premium. Although, if you're using satellite, you'll be seeing MPEG-4 and not MPEG-2. Some of the cable folks are moving over to MPEG-4, which gives you not quite what you get from the broadcast. It's pretty close. And you can't appreciate any of it because you don't have a high-def TV.
Yes, that's true. I have the resources to buy 10 of them. It's just a matter of writing the check and making the problem go away. Hey, it's been fun, Eric. We're beyond the normal time. For those guys that are still there, that are willing to stay up this late to listen to these crazy people, John, Paul, Dick, and Hal, this was TechNet number 1468 of the series that began 31 years ago today, September of 1982. So, as long as we keep our craziness, we'll probably be back next week and trying to do it again. Bye-bye, you all. And if John, you're there, or Eric, whoever wants to, go ahead and say some remarks. It's been fun. K2RIW, be clear about listening. Be kind to each other.
Okay, Dick. I hope you can hear me on the 3-6 line. Good night, Dick. Have fun. And we'll see you again soon. Eric, have a great day.
Yeah, we're hearing you quite well, John. Particularly when I go to 375 directly, a little bit more noise comes through in the link to 85. That's it sounded good. Bye-bye, you all.
Good night, Dick. We'll talk to you again soon. And good night to you, John. And believe it or not, the constant carriers of 25 is still there. Interestingly, when I did turn 85 on, the local guy didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, he's been on that big steady, and he's hitting on the liquid pretty high, too, so he's at full power.
Yeah, this particular guy, Eric, with my earphones, I could hear the sound in the background. I could hear the sound of a family. I don't think it is our usual guy. I think there's a reasonable possibility this really is a stuck microphone, if you know what I mean. Go ahead, Eric.
I'm at the signal level at the limiter. And we have it marked off where each individual is in terms of signal strength, and this lines up perfectly. So. And before, when I turned the similar to receivers on, he actually heard me coming in. The other guy just jammed it up all the way there and got bored when I finally shut it off.
Oh, well. We got to get a little smarter, and you and I know of some ways. You and I and John know of some ways. And some interesting future experiments should take place. Bye-bye for now.
All right, take care, Dick. John, you still up? Go to your ASAP, would you?
Hello and a good night from Toronto, Canada. B3 says he's at monitoring.
So you got this, you were getting all that stuff all this time, Scott? Wow. You must be able to stay up pretty late, K2RAW.
Like compared to last night.
Yeah, I think all of us went to almost 4 in the morning, you, me, and John. Isn't that true?
And we held on, I guess, for about another 15 or 20 minutes after you used yourself there. So it went a little longer.
Yeah, I remember that in the college days, our philosophy used to be, every time the sun rises, you got to change your socks. You guys came close to going to sunrise.
Had it been a month earlier, it would have been, that's for sure.
Are you there, John?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Eric's here, too, also, I believe. And, you know, we did have a problem on the UHF also with an interloper.
Wow.
Oh, we can solve that if that happens.
You've got a lot of knobs on that control system you got there. Is that true, Eric?
I'm adding more stuff to it. It takes time. I wrote some software to deal with it. Somebody else is supposed to find a nicer version of it, but I guess you never got around to it.
Yeah, this situation reminds me of the business I was in for 30 years. Countermeasures, counter-countermeasures, counter-counter-countermeasures. It goes on and on. There's no end to the defensive mechanisms back and forth. KQRIW.
KQRIW, K2J. Well, the system is getting more and more complex. I'm afraid if I just drop dead, nobody's going to be able to deal with it.
You're not allowed to drop dead. Simple.
That's it. You you're not allowed to. The contract says you're not allowed to, Eric. And if you started training an apprentice, what's your guess as to how long it would take to bring him up to speed?
Well, here's the unique thing. I need somebody that can understand RF, can understand firmware and how to write it, because I built a lot of stuff, can understand programming in C, can understand Windows, and can understand Linux.
Well, at least no one.
No, I know of one single human being that has almost all of that. Tiny bit light on RF, but all the rest is there.
Your son, right?
That's the one.
Yeah, well, you know, all I use is broadcasting, working at the computer graphics, but it kind of got me doing everything. I'm not a great programmer. I mean, you know, I never went to school, but I do it by the seat of my pants. It's funny, when I was working at the computer graphics plant, I'd write something that would be like 10 pages long. I'd bring it to my friend who's a doctorate of mathematics, doctorate of computer science, doctorate of physics, and come back with like a half page.
Yeah, back in those days where you had to do, I guess, what's it now? At the bit level, you're programming microprocessors. I'm guessing all kinds of crafty techniques were required because of memory limitations. Nowadays, when memory is no longer a problem, the exact efficiency of the source code, as long as it's not spaghetti code and as long as it responds the same way each time you go through it, I think that some of those requirements have been lightened a little bit. Over to you, Eric, KQRIW.
Now, the problem today, for me, I tend to use, my labels tend to be English, and I understand the way many of the IDEs or the development, the integrated platforms that they have for, like, you know, C++ or various other things, that's written in computer ease, and the labels just drive me crazy. I just like to look at a label and have it mean something, and, that's the difference between me and a real programmer, you know. I'm the seat of the pants kind of guy. No, I was talking about is programming in C, but I use real labels. I mean, assembly language I do very well. Most people don't understand my assembly language because I think differently than programmers do, so I think more like a hardware guy. And my code is a bit more like Verilog or VHDL, which is hardware development language. So when you're doing a CPLD or an FPGA, that's the kind of language that you use. It really runs around state machines, and that kind of thing can drive you nuts if you're not really good at math. My first impression reading some of the data of the capable and maturity model software development United States, whatever the name of the organization is, the nicest way to write significant programming is to establish a good number of clean subroutines where each subroutine has a known number of variables going in, a known process that takes place, a known number of variables that comes back out. You get a number of good subroutines that have been reasonably debugged and get universally accepted. Then what you call programming is really an executive program that calls the subroutines in the right order. And then the tracing of the program becomes a lot more sane. The capability maturity model will let you know where you are in program development. It allows you to predict how much more work you've got to do in order to bring it all together. I guess that's the height of structured programming, probably speaking in too much idealization. But is any of that possible, Eric? K2RIW?
Well, I use as many APIs as possible from standard libraries. I mean, there's no point in reinventing the wheel. But some of the stuff that drives me crazy, but it takes me a while to figure out what do they mean? You know, what's this variable about? I mean, when you read the manual behind each API, it gives you, you know, the entries to the subroutine and what it returns. That stuff is, once you understand it, it's pretty easy. But I tend to make my own arrays, and I do weird things mathematically. I make pointers to pointers, which drives me crazy, but it also drives other people nuts because they don't really, you know, as well as you commented, my way of thinking is different than other people's way of thinking, so they have trouble with the stuff that I write. And the VSC code that I wrote is really crazy. I met one of the guys who was actually a friend's brother who literally goes around the country teaching the military and all that stuff. He's sort of like a grandfather of the VSC code. He looks at my stuff and says, this is great, you know. And then he turns it into computer ease, and I no longer understand it.
Yeah, that makes some sense. I noticed that what we're saying now on 125 is being coupled to 85 and 375 with about a second of delay. So I'm pretty sure that this is internet transfer. And I guess someday in the future this may also be an RF link, Eric?
No, there's no reason for it to become an RF link. We generally don't link this machine to the other machines. The other machines are sort of like a network of its own, so that's why the RF link. And the interactivity between east and west, you know, people trying to get in from east because people are fast on the trigger in the west, with the RF link, we don't have that problem when they key down their head.
Sounds good. I'm going to have to go away pretty soon. KC2WGB. What do you think, John?
On any subject.
K2RIW?
I don't know, but I saw something the other night. I was talking to Glenn about it. I don't know if you saw it. The night we were talking until 5 o'clock in the morning, when I left the shack and was entering my home, I viewed the sky. And azimuth 095 at 40 degrees elevation off the eastern horizon, I saw something that looked like a flashbulb in the sky, which lasted approximately the duration of twice a normal flashbulb from the old days. And it, no trail at all. I have no idea what it was, and it wasn't an iridium flare.
So I think what you're saying is that you went to heavens above, and there was no iridium flare at that time. You just happened to be looking in that direction, saw this, let me pick a number, 2 second flash, and in brilliance, was it as bright as Venus?
Oh, it was brighter than the space station. This thing was extremely bright. I would say at least a -5.
And you've never seen anything like that before or since. And you kept looking in that sky, and let's see, at that hour, my guess is you were at either astronomical twilight or nautical twilight. Is that true?
I think it was just before, because it was pretty dark, the sky. And the flash was probably a second long, because a flash bulb is really a short duration. It was about twice that. I've never seen anything like that before in my life. So maybe it was space junk, which is what Glenn thought, and if its trajectory was coming at me, sort of at me, I may not see a trail. It was brief, but it was bright. And there was no mistake, I just happened to be looking at the exact location where it happened, and it was, I didn't know what to think. I thought maybe I got a cosmic ray in my eye or something. I don't know.
FYJ.
FYJ, recognize. There's a characteristic way that a meteor striking the atmosphere comes into brilliance and goes back down. Is there any possibility, John, that what you saw was a meteor coming head on and it had that characteristic and then passed it over to FYJ?
Dick, I've never seen a meteor that would match up that trajectory, coming almost from due east straight at me at 40 degrees. I don't think so. And it had no color. It was white. Very bright white. FYJ, pick it up. KC2WGB.
Harry's going to tell us what it is. What is it, Harry?
I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm going to ask if it could possibly have been something. Did you consider the possibility it might have been an aircraft turning its landing lights on and off momentarily?
No, there was no motion I could detect. Left, right, up, or down. No motion at all, and it was very brief. And I was looking in that direction for at least 15 minutes to see if I could see anything else. So, don't know. And Dave happened to pick up the conversation the following night, and he's the one that checked on the internet and on those charts. There was no iridium flare at that time.
Okay, it was just a thought. I have something for you too, Dick.
Go ahead, Harry.
Back in the SpaceNet part of TechNet, you were opining about the distance of Mercury from the sun. I looked it up on space.com and wasn't able to get the information in during the net, probably because of the shifting frequencies that we were working on. At any rate, the elliptical orbit is at its closest 28.5 million miles, and at its furthest 43.5 million miles.
Good information, Harry. So if I say 33 million miles, it's sort of an apt in between those two. It's in the right ballpark. It's a little bit like if you run into a grizzly bear in the woods, you don't have to know is he 600 pounds or 800 pounds. All you got to know is he's big, he's ornery, you better be moving in the other direction or you're about to become a meal. And so by that token, the 800,000 miles is the perihelion of the ISON satellite, comet, which is around 35 times closer than Mercury. It allows me to know pretty fast that that poor comet is really going to be a hot time in the old town tonight. Over to you, Harry, KQRIW.
Oh, clearly the magnitude is sufficient. That was just me being semantic with detail. It's a failing. This is KQFYJ. I'll be on the side, guys.
Now, that's not a failing, Harry. All good engineering is in the details. If you are measuring the pH of somebody's blood, a very small shift represents the difference between life and death. A hell of a lot of non-engineering people don't realize that. Sometimes very small differences in the numbers. They think those engineers are, paranoid and worried about fine details in second and third decimal places. Sometimes the success and failure is right there. Over to you, Harry.
That's absolutely true. In the sciences, for casual conversation, though, it is a failing. As far as in the details are concerned, read a little bit about chaos theory, and you'll find out just how significant a change in the third or fourth decimal place would be. Maybe not instantly, but a few minutes down the road in computational cycles, and it can make radical changes in the outcome. Look up Lauren and Strange Attractors if you want more detail.
Sounds good. I'm going to be leaving you guys pretty soon. Bye-bye for now.
All right, Dick. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you on down the log. KC2WG.
C2FYJ, clear.
One quick question, John. Are you envious about an electron microscope? Would you like to have one? That's the one thing that's not in your laboratory yet, John.
Dick, I could have had one. Wesley got his for free, and he had a second one. He tried to have me take it here, but I had no room for it, and I really don't think I'd be using it in any way. You know, it's nice to play with, nice to have, but what am I going to do with it, you know? But I'm sure he'll have a lot of fun. I hope he starts putting it together.
Well, those pictures are not together. It looked like the pictures were together.
Well, I don't know what happened to it when he transported it, but he had to take it apart. I guess he started reassembling it. But he also has to get it wired up and get the compressors and the vacuum stuff working. He's got a little project there.
It'll keep him up the street tonight, so to speak. That's a fun joke.
Yep, but I'll tell you the truth, Dick. I don't think he's going to see any atomic structures with that. I don't think he's going to see them lined up either. Not at 20 nanometers or 10 nanometers.
Oh, you're absolutely right. There is nothing that will really show you individual molecules. By way of a tunneling scanning electron microscope, you can get sort of the equivalent of a landscape that looks like the bumps in the road, which is letting you know where the individual atoms are located or individual molecules are located. But you can't really see molecules. Not a chance can you ever see a proton or a neutron or a nucleus. Not a chance you're ever going to see an electron. So we're going to have to accept the fact that there's a hell of a lot of things we'd like to see. And we got some evidence that they're there, but you ain't never going to see them. KQRIW.
Well, I think we're going to need a quantum improvement. Never seen that twisted ladder look, the helix ladder.
John, to the best of my knowledge, that is a model. Not a physical thing, you know, as far as I know. In other words, they show the bonds, they show the connection points, but it's not, as far as I know, there's like no microscope where they've actually, you know, viewed something like that. And as far as I'm aware, most light sources would probably damage the DNA, so you couldn't even get that close to it. To the best of my knowledge, John, KC2 Selective.
Okay, Glenn. I thought that was an actual recreation of what they saw when you see that in a diagram. Good info. Dick?
D2FYJ.
Harry recognized. I'm pretty sure they've never seen it. There was a lady who was heavily involved in that research at that time, and she got no credit for it. But she made an X-ray diffraction picture of a DNA molecule. And so you squirt these X-rays at this molecule. It gives you a scattered diagram. It's like throwing ping pong balls at some complicated object. And you look at the way the ping pong balls bounce off of it, and they fall onto a screen, and you look at that pattern, and you try to play it backwards to try to figure out what must the original object have looked like. And so by that very indirect process, they've come up with that model. I'm reasonably sure nobody has ever seen it. KC2FYJ, KQRIW in the group.
Means Wesley doesn't have a chance.
I don't think anyone's ever seen it either, but they do know the angle by which various atoms and bonds together with other atoms. And once they figured out how the pieces seem to fit together, they can make models that conform to those angular requirements. And the double helix structure that we commonly think of as the DNA helix is literally the only way that those molecules or components of the DNA molecules can fit together. They must be in that form. We haven't seen it, but mathematically and chemically, that's what it has to be.
Could I have a comment on that?
Yeah, Mother Nature will sometimes take your has to be and humble you. Go ahead, Glenn.
My suggestion is going to be on about the same size. Every time there's been a must, sometimes never quite passed the test. I think what happens is that the best way of saying it, Harry, is that to the best of our knowledge of today and with all of the information that we have, we would suggest that that's the way that it is. But could we all be wrong? In other words, it's probably very similar to it, but could there be more complications to it? I think there certainly is. But certainly it is analytically correct enough so that we can get the information that we need from it. But does it really look like that? Does it really have to be that way? I don't think that we have enough information to really get it. That's really 100% true. Case of duty, do I hear?
I agree. I got to leave you guys. I've been called away. K2RIW. Enjoy.
73 is big. I'm out of here, too. 73 is well. Everybody have a good day.
Number 3, Glenn. 73, Harry. And Dick. Enjoy.
73, everybody. Have a good evening.
Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel. Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel. Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel. Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel. Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel. Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
It's just a level problem. Are you hearing me better now?
Yeah, now that you backed off.
the microphone a little bit and lower it how loud you would speak, it sounds a bit better.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I had to change all the radio here at the, downstairs. I just got it set up.
Okay, which one are you using?
TM-241. We had the 202 Radio Shack for years up here. If I decided to give up the transmit.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, once that happens, you can't do too much. I don't know if there's any new parts around, right?
Luckily, it has a very common output transistor. And I just put it aside. I figured I needed to get something working, so I grabbed the 241 real fast out of inventory and plugged right in. Just had it set the phone for you to see, and it looks like it's flying.
Okay, well, at least you got something usable.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Robert. Bob, was there a problem with the repeater last night?
I don't know. I wasn't listening. I don't know if I had an allergy attack yesterday or I'm coming in out with some sort of a blunt. Bug might have just been feeling miserable.
And Y2H Mobile.
Go ahead, Lou.
Hey, good morning. This problem this morning. Some signal was on there and timing it out. Constant signal. I don't know. It'll happen again. And Hal, so you know, my 706 died, so I might be calling you.
Oh, okay, no sweat, Lou. Did it die everything, or did it die part of it?
I was on Simplex talking to someone, and right in the middle of my sentence, it went black completely. Everything is dead. No power, no lights, nothing.
You're running it in the home station?
Affirmative, yes.
Did you check the power right at the plug going into the radio? You know, with the radio connected?
What I did was I had it teed off. I had an amp on it. And so the amp was still lit up. So that should have been okay. I had bug nuts on the connection. And of course it was fused before it white out to both devices. But no, I didn't do too much. I just kind of put it up on its side to signal, you know, disaster. I guess that's my disaster signal.
Wait, there's a separate feed. Fusing feed on that radio. Are you running a normal power cable with that thing?
Yes.
Double check the, there should be fuses in the line going to the radio. I would measure the voltage right at the plug going into the radio. Take a couple little pins, go right into that power cable, right where the plug goes into the radio, and see if you lost your voltage there.
All right, yeah, I wonder if there's any fuses inside. I don't want to hold it. I know I think Bob is in there. I'll do that. I visually inspected the fuses. I did that quickly, and they seem to be okay. There are two fuses in line with the power cord.
I see those look good and be bad. That's why I'll go all the way up to where it goes into the radio and confirm you have voltage there. All right, no problem. If it's with a headache, call me and we'll see what it is. A total failure like that's easy to cure. It's when it's a half a failure that becomes dangerous.
Yeah, all righty, very good. And, yeah, hopefully, I'll do that. And what was I going to say? Oh, it happened so suddenly, and I'm not even sure, because it took me by surprise if there was a, there might have been an accompanying noise, or maybe it was just the rig, you know, the speaker, but I'm not really sure. But we'll see. All right. Bob, good morning. And I got to get out of here. Oh, I'm just in a parking lot here waiting for the open. This is Don Building open. Here he is now, so he's going to do that. 7-3's guys. Bob, over to you. Good morning.
Okay, take care, Lou. I got to go out towards where you're heading to this morning. I got to see my lawyer out in Melville. All right. Not lawyer, I should say my broker. They're both close to each other out there. This is W2OSR.
Hey, Bob, we'll let you go. I'm just going to get out of here myself to grab some breakfast. It's almost 8 o'clock. And I saw something else I wanted to tell you. Hello, Kevin, Robert. I still got to get that plexi from you. It may be going out today, this afternoon, to tickle the wings.
Okay, well, after I go see the broker, I think I'm going to come back to the house and just kind of zonk out for the rest of the day.
All right, well, let me see what happens. Later in the afternoon, I may be swinging off through the LIE. Maybe if you feel better, we could meet up and I'll take you for a ride.
I'm not going flying anywhere, that much I can tell you. Let me go see. I had two pieces of that stuff around here. I'm going to have to go find them again. Take care. I'll catch you later. W2OSI.
Don't worry, Bob. I'm not signed off fully yet, so I could take you if I wanted to. DPZ Mobile, Richmond Hill, listening.
Morning, Howard. Who's HSC Mobile?
Who's HSC, K6DPZ? Come on. Nice morning, 56 degrees. It's clear, though. Pick it up. Who's HSC, K6DPZ?
As Mr. Rogers used to say, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Nice and clear. Dry. Can't complain. So, I heard you talking to Lou earlier. The HCX 202 died on you. We could fix one of those for thee.
The other day, I went and picked up the mic. I wanted to make a comment to somebody on Weimark. And I picked up the mic, give a comment, get in. I don't get in. I don't get in. Now I look up, I see the mic, I got no RF. So I took it off its perch. And it's a very repairable radio. It doesn't use a power module. It uses a discrete output transistor. And I just replaced it with a 241A. I went in the showroom. I said, okay, what's the same size, same power, and just easy to use? Because when it comes to using some of these crazy radios, I forget the procedures. So we grabbed that and stuck it in, and everything took off nicely.
Well, the one you had up and running this morning, that's the one with the modules you could run 220 in it as well.
No, 241A is just a dedicated VHF transceiver, about 50 watts. It's small, has a very large heat sink, and it works great. It's a nice little radio. I have to throw something in the spot. I was looking at an ICOM, I looked at a Yaesu, and I saw this little Kenwood. The little Kenwood looked at me and said, take me, I want to be on your bench.
Okay, I'm mixing it up with the other one that Les has. That's some of the guys. Are you able to hit the 440 repeater from your location?
Yeah, I'm able to hit the 440 machine. I have what the FET number, it's a tri-band, 1.2, 440, and 2 meters, 7 knots. There's so many numbers, I'm getting to a point where I can't remember them all. It's a nice little radio, though, they made. It has tri-band modules in it. That hits the 440 machine. I got another rig that hits the 440 machine. So it's not too bad for my location.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, from where you are now, could you go to 440? I want to see if this works on 440. I haven't tried it yet.
It would if I could. I have a 706 Mark II in this little buggy. I pulled the G out. I have a intermittent on that G. Every time I really need it, it drops transmit. So I pulled the G out and I flew a GC Mark II. So I can't get up to 440 at the moment.
Okay, I understand. Anyhow, I did put an extension cord, I don't know if you heard, on this mic cord. Bobby had mentioned it in Jerry about the computer cord. So down in the Delaware Lowe's, I picked up a 2-footer with a coupler, and for $13 and change, I was back in business.
Say, so you didn't have to make anything, it was all out of the box.
Very good. I was so happy because it was so short. Because the way the radio was under the seat, it just, I'd have to put my head down almost to the console. Well, that's an exaggeration, just to, I don't want to break the cord or the connection by pulling it too hard.
Smart choice. I'll tell you, the Sargent connectors are garbage. And you really can't put stress on them. They do come intermittent, and they do have a lot of problems. That's good. So you're able to just back to back and extend it. Yeah, I may do the same thing here with the 706. I put tension on the mic, and I know one of these days it's going to die. You know, it was great when they used an 8-plus, but they cheapened everything out, and I'm just not turned down with these RJ connectors. You know, it's all because of the computer era and all this crap, but it doesn't impress me. Let me grab a ramp, I'll be right back. K6, DP3.
Okay, I'm on the side. That says I just say Morgan.
Yeah, just say K6, DP3.
I'm here, Alan, to the Jesuit.
How's that new radio working out for you?
I like it, but I was like I was saying, I haven't tried it on 440. That's why there's nobody on it. It's quiet. There was Jay earlier, but he signed talking to another fellow out there. I got somebody eventually. Bob came over and helped me program some frequencies. I have to go on the computer. My son's going to help me. I have the cable and some adapter I needed to program the odd frequencies for the police frequencies, so I'll have to do that maybe Friday. Bob said we couldn't put it in directly without going on the computer to do it on their website.
Yeah, well, they're a different split. They're using 3 megs instead of 5 megs as a split on UHF.
Right, there's about 4 of them. There's a helicopter that I listen to, a news helicopter, and NYPD Emergency Service, and 2 others. I forget what I have.
Well, you're good. If you get pulled over with those on, you're showing your retirement ID. They're not going to hassle you.
I'm not worried about that. It's just like if I'm on the Buck Parkway, and I would to listen to it and see what's happening. And, of course, the state trooper, that's another frequency I listen to. I think that's in there, though, for the 7th state. There's an accident or something.
Yeah, that's a good point about some of these transceivers. They will cover that part of the spectrum. On the same hand, it's a dangerous part because these radios fall into the wrong hands. But I can't believe it. It's always on my right side. I'm in the center, right lane. On my right side, not even the right lane, goes right around, makes a left-hand turn on 111th Street. You know, I think the brains were passed out. They were sitting on the toilet.
Just be careful, a woman with crazy driving.
That?
I say you have to be careful with the crazy drivers.
You know, you're totally defensive. You have to be totally defensive out here. It's crazy.
Let me drop the mic. I'm trying to park here. There's all kinds.